Because as life happens, there's things that tell us not to trust life, right? You go through a heartbreak and somebody dies and things unfold in ways that you just really didn't want them to unfold. And it's like, every single one of these experiences can make you just be like, I don't trust life. I don't like this. But with those experiences, if we really choose to not trust life, then it's like, I find that my light dims and my willingness to be alive and wake up in the morning becomes smaller and smaller and smaller. And personally, I just don't want to live that way.
Welcome to Collecting Sparks. I am Sarah Schill, and I'm meeting with people who send out sparks with what they do or who they are. Collecting those sparks is my deep passion, and I hope our conversations will send out sparks to you too, so that they can continue to fly. My guest today is Tara Moraleda. Tara is a meditation teacher, life coach, astrologer, poet, artist, dancer, model, and much more. But above all, she's a free spirit that inspires her community on and offline with her positive approach towards life, her sparkling personality, and her sharings that both feel easy and deep. What inspired me to lead this conversation is, apart from Tara's work and vocation, the intense duality I feel about her. Tara seems like a melange between an ancient soul that spent lifetimes alone in a cave, connecting to spirit, and a young wild chick that savors life to the fullest. I wanted to know how she brings those sides of her personality together and what made her this multidimensional being. We speak about Tara's upbringing and the moment when she first realized that her perception of the world wasn't the whole truth, that there was a different magical realm ready to support her. We talk about the great mystery and the human experience, about why it is important to open our heart again and again, even if we've been hurt. Tara shares how meditation changed her life and why she ended up sitting in silent meditation for over 200 days so far. An inner voice led her to Maui, Hawaii, where she started guiding meditation retreats and seemingly accidentally ended up becoming a life coach with high-paying clients. That is a thread I see weaving through Tara's life, to listen to the voice within and follow, to let life unfold but also show up and put in the work. Tara learned about the Akashic Records as well as studying astrology and human design. She openly shares what an accidental MDMA overdose had to do with that and how this traumatic experience ended up being one of the biggest lessons of her life. In the end, she shares one of her poems from her upcoming poetry collection that artfully sums up the duality of her experience on this earth. As Tara is also a world traveler, she recorded our conversation from a hostel in Morocco, which explains some background sounds. Let's not get distracted by those details. After all, that's life. Wishing you so much joy and magic in my conversation with Tara Moraleda. I was swimming before and I was a bit reflecting on our conversation and on you. And I kind of, when I connected to you and my feeling towards you, it was like, on one hand, there is this, you know, beautiful, hot, hippie girl, I would say, like traveling the world, posting on Instagram, having so much fun with friends. And then I get this, yeah, like eremit sitting in the Himalayan mountains and meditating a lot, very wise, getting downloads from the stars. And somehow I felt like very intensely these two parts. And I don't know if that has anything to do with you or it's just my perception, but I wanted to ask you how you connect to that.
First of all, I just want to say I love that reflection, both of those, I connect to, and I haven't heard it in that particular way. And yeah, I definitely see and feel both these parts of me deeply and have worked with it deeply within my astrology. And just as life continues to reveal itself, it has shown me that I hold very deep duality of very much in the external, in the like playing and look at me and I'm having fun and I'm in a body. And then there's the other part of me that feels very deeply connected to God and spirit and the realms of mysticism. And a huge part of my journey is how to be in balance between the realm of God and spirit and the realm of play and the material realm.
And do you succeed to get this balance? Or is it like a constant work?
It's a dance. Mm-hmm. I think we're all trying to figure out how to dance with life, right? Because yeah. life gives each of us so much to be with. Like, to be alive is such a big journey. And I think that there's times where my dance is incredibly fun and graceful, and there's times of it where it's incredibly messy. Mm-hmm. However, I find that the deeper I'm in my practices and in my connection to God, there's a lot of grace and there's a lot of forgiveness for these parts of me that are so clearly human and so clearly mess up, and I'm messy and I can like mess up in my relationships or like sometimes not do well with my finances or forget, you know, I'm late to something and like have my human things with my body. And I have, through my practices, a lot of acceptance around the parts of me that are human.
What I heard from you is that you came into a family where spirituality already was a thing. And art. And so did you grow up with practices with an idea of there's another realm, or when did this start for you?
I feel incredibly lucky because my parents came from two deeply spiritual backgrounds. My mother is Norwegian and Scandinavian, and my grandpa is, her father is a very well-known Lutheran pastor. So I come from this sect of Christianity. And then my father comes from a sect of very powerful, clearly witches in the Philippines who practice witchcraft and mysticism and imparted on me this perspective of spirituality around like life is infinite. There are so many things that we do not understand as a human. And with these two very diverse backgrounds of like learning how to pray in a church and being baptized, and then also having my father hand me the autobiography of a yogi when I was just a child and telling me like this world is not what it seems, really opened up my connection to spirit and then led me on my own path of how I wanted to relate to God. But they gave me a very beautiful platform and canvas to work with in my relationship to God. And it's put me on, I think, a path of freedom and liberation that has just made it so much more easier to walk in this material realm.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. Thinking of my children, how much it helps if you do your work and can give things of your path and what you found to your children. So they might not have to work so hard to just find out that there might be more or might be a different realm to life.
Right. That's so beautiful. That's so beautiful. Do you find that your kids are naturally open-minded?
Yeah, I think children come with a very open mind. And yeah, I have the feeling that they are super connected, and then at some point it gets a bit dimmed, and I have the feeling the more I don't know, go into nature with them or speak with them or do rituals or so, then it opens up again and they remember in a way.
It's so beautiful. That's so beautiful. And how old are they?
8 and 14. Big boys.
So yeah. That's like right around that age where it's like it's like the becoming of an adult, and there can even be this forgetting that starts to happen sometimes, mm-hmm. like as you come into puberty and like, it's like you're not a child anymore, but you're definitely not an adult. And it's this interesting age. And I actually remember around 10 was when I was in like what felt like a deep spiritual quest as a 10-year-old, being like, what is this life? I am so confused and perplexed by it. And that was actually the age that my dad handed me Autobiography of a Yogi.
But what was it, because of these things your dad gave you that you came into the crisis, or were they helpful on your quest out of the crisis?
they were helpful on my quest out of the crisis because I had been living in the Bay Area in California with my parents and very artistic town, city. And suddenly when I was 10, we moved to Las Vegas because it was a lot cheaper for my parents. And the contrast was so intense for me to go from this beautiful, artistic, thriving city into this dry desert with no water. And as a 10-year-old, I was so deeply confused around their action and why they did that and what this land was of Las Vegas, the desert, where everybody gambled and drank, and it felt like there was no spirituality. And I was just very confused with what I was experiencing of this world and of this earth. And it just so happened that that was when my father handed me Autobiography of a Yogi. And I remember opening it up to a chapter where it talks about this guru or something, and he hands one of his disciples, like, he just opens his palm and suddenly a lotus appears out of it. And like the most fragrant smells were appearing from the lotus. And it was a lesson to me of there is real magic on this earth. And this material realm of what I see is not actually real. And there's a magic that is possible to tap into that if I were to make myself available to it, it would reveal itself to me. So I, at that age of 10, even though I was in this very desert environment, it made me want to connect to magic. And I felt like that's how I was able to keep my spirit alive in a place that was so dry, spiritually dry and physically dry.
Wow, that's amazing. With 10 years old, no, that it's, you have this capacity of opening yourself up. And how did that look for you? Like, how did you connect to the magic?
Yeah, I think maybe in some ways it was like a defense mechanism. Like it was a survival mechanism. The way that I continued to connect with it was a very clear feeling of God. It was like spirit was something that was laced around everything and every moment. And by connecting to that feeling, pretty much very often, it's how I was able to stay sane in a place that felt so disconnected. And I just like, I almost like held on to it like without even trying, just for my own mental health and wellness as a child. And it was just very clearly a feeling. And I would spend a lot of time alone, staring off in my room, connecting to that energy. So I like, in some ways, like my spiritual practice was already beginning, and I would just spend time alone, feeling that energy. And and now that I'm speaking about it, I'm like, wow, that's crazy.
No, it's amazing. It's such
details of this. Yeah.
Yeah, but to be able to do this and to really stay with yourself and connect to an energy that, however you call it, but that you can feel and to understand, okay, this energy, this magic really exists, and I can tap into that with 10 years old. That's really wow.
Yeah, you know, again, I think now that I'm speaking about it, and I didn't expect this conversation to go this way, so it's amazing to have this be revealed. But I didn't. It wasn't an intention. It was, again, it was like a survival mechanism. It was like this reality feels weird. What feels right? And like spirit and God and connecting to that energy was the thing that felt the most right for me. And without even realizing it, I was just connecting to it all the time.
And for people now who have this conception of, I don't know, a Christian God, or what is for you this energy? Because if we use these phrases like spirit or God, it can also lead to a misconception. So what is it for you?
100%, and great question. So for people who are listening and tuning in, I use the word God very openly. And to me, God is the great mystery. It is source. It is beyond what my human mind can even comprehend. It is the infinite, expansive universe as it is. And in my belief system, and what really works for me, is believing that this infinite, abundant energy of mystery is constantly listening to me and supporting me in my desires. And it's constantly listening to everything and everyone, because it is everything and everyone. And in my belief system, all religions are pointing to the mystery and pointing to what we cannot even try to comprehend as humans. And in that way, like, I respect all belief systems and all religions. And then I have my own dance with God and source and the universe. And with that, I use the word God very openly.
It feels like a lot of trust. And maybe it came from spending this time alone and checking into with this energy. But for me, who I came from an atheist background, and my parents had a lot of struggle with their Christian background, I grew up without having this feeling of trust in something bigger existing. And when you now describe yourself as a 10-year-old and checking in to stay sane, it feels like from the source there comes a lot of trust in that you are held, that you're not alone.
I feel like it was always a feeling that was very deeply imparted on me. You know, this feeling of trust. And then it was a skill that, or it was like something that I continued to develop. Because as life happens, there's things that tell us not to trust life, right? Mm-hmm. You go through a heartbreak and somebody dies and things unfold in ways that you just really didn't want them to unfold. And it's like, every single one of these experiences can make you just be like, I don't trust life. I don't like this. But with those experiences, if we really choose to not trust life, then it's like, I find that my light dims and my willingness to be alive and wake up in the morning becomes smaller and smaller and smaller. And personally, I just don't want to live that way.
We take a brief break for a little ad. Did you already get my poetry collection, probably out there collecting sparks? If not, you can get it on Amazon or via my website, sarahschill.com. Those poems about the beauty and sorrow of being alive sometimes speak of love, others of heartbreak, many of hope. My hope is that they might gift you many sparks and a shelter whenever needed. But now let's get back to my conversation with Tara Moralida.
Mm-hmm. I really see life as a gift, and the work is to keep the heart open to the mystery even after you've been hurt. And by keeping your heart open to the mystery, it gives you so much more life force energy to go after the bigger dreams and to forgive the ways that you've been hurt and open yourself up to love again and the magic. And I think that, like, these really difficult scenarios that happen to us, it's like this way that we get to be strengthened in our trust of God, even when it feels like we can't trust God.
This feels like such a profound message, I find, to constantly practice trusting, to constantly open up again, even though you feel like, I need to close down my heart because it hurts just so much, and then instead open yourself up again.
Yeah. You know, I think that those who have an open heart are some of the strongest people there are. And there can be this misconception when you see adults or anybody or elders just like with an open heart, there can be this like, oh, well, they didn't have something terrible happen to them. They must have had their life easy because their heart is still open. That's not true. Every single person goes through pain and grief, and every single person knows somebody who dies, and every single person has their heart broken. Everybody has to face death, right? So it's like these people who have their heart open are actually people who are doing the deep work, even though it looks like they're laughing and they're having fun and being light and silly. It's because they've gone into their depths and worked through these pieces that stop them from fully showing up in joy to life.
Yeah, I know this sometimes when, I don't know, I just got this image when you're doing plant medicine journey or really intense work in groups and everybody goes through the mud and is just working so hard and feeling like dying and rebirthing. And in the end, when you celebrate together and everybody with their pain, with everything they felt and had to go through in life, and then to celebrate this life with all of these parts present and included, that feels so beautiful. And I have the feeling that sometimes it's just like this, yeah, just this big celebration of life contains all of it, and still we celebrate and still we love.
Yes, yes, yes. And we remember through these deep experiences that Source, God, the universe is always here within every single moment. And how can we clear out these human parts of us that don't see God? And allow ourselves to die and look at our shit and like drink the medicine and confront ourselves and have the hard conversations in order to clear ourselves so that we can show up more fully for love.
Mm. And how was that for you? So from that space to moving to Las Vegas and starting the work, how did you come to meditation, to life coaching, to all the other parts that came into your life?
It's always been a dance, I would say, between trying different things and then coming back to meditation. And then I'm going to go over here and then come back. And it's like, it feels like a fate that I can't escape. And my connection to my meditation practice is something that... It's a direct plug-in to God for me personally. And I remember being in school and film school, like in university and high school, and finding myself connecting to Source in very big ways just through yoga and making yoga my very center of my day. Like it was something that I had to do every single day. And that led me to a yoga teacher training. And that yoga teacher training led me to spending a lot of time alone in nature, meditating and doing my practices. And I found that I would, no matter what I did, like whether I was in Las Vegas or at a festival or traveling, I always needed to come back and be alone and be in my meditation practice. So I had a number of years traveling, doing yoga, meditating, and I was like constantly like in a longer term relationship. And then when I was 24, I heard a voice. It was a clear voice, and it said, move to Maui alone, sell all of your things, just go. And I was in I had lived a great life at the time. I was living in Northern California, living on a farm and doing my practices and love and traveling. And then when that voice came in, it was so clear that I just like had to break up with my boyfriend, buy a one-way ticket to Maui, barely knew anyone on the island, maybe knew like three or four people, and just showed up. And I just showed up and I was like, I'm going to make this work. I have $1,000 to my name. I shipped my car. And I was like, I'm just going to figure this out. Worst comes to worst, I can sleep in my car at night.
But just a moment, like this voice that you heard, was it during a meditation practice, or how can I imagine that this moment happened?
Yeah. So I just had a fever. I was feverous in my cabin in the woods, and my boyfriend was away on a surf trip, and I was completely alone. And it was 3 days of moving through this really intense fever. And when I came out the other side, it was a voice, and it said, move to Maui, go alone.
And you followed?
Yeah. I completely followed it. I was like, okay, I'm going to just go ahead and follow this, because when I heard the voice, it felt peaceful in my body. To me, that is a sign of intuition. When you hear a message and it brings a sense of peace, then it is your intuition speaking. However, the reaction is your ego. And my reaction, of course, was like, that's insane. Oh my gosh, I don't know if I can do it. I'm scared. Like, is this wise? How do I do this? I don't know. But the voice itself was so peaceful. And I could just sense if I didn't listen to it, then there would be a lot of suffering. So I decided to listen to it and I made my way out to Hawaii. I landed, started to just like make my way around the island, make friends, eventually like got these like small paying jobs. I was working in an art gallery. I was babysitting. I was doing all types of odd jobs. And then eventually I found myself at a meditation retreat. I got invited to sit for 10 days in silence from a friend of a friend. And when I sat at this meditation retreat, it was right before my 25th birthday. And it was one of the most difficult things I had done in my life, to sit down in silence. I felt like I couldn't even breathe. I couldn't stay still. It was hours upon hours every single day from 4:30 in the morning till 9 p.m. at night. And at the end of the 10 day, I was flying. I was just so tapped into my practice, felt so tapped into God. And I knew that this was the medicine that I wanted to receive and give the world. And my journey began where I started to sit 10 days every single month. And I just told the foundation, I will do anything to work with you guys so I can sit every single month. So I would work in the kitchen and I would do body work and I would help facilitate courses. And eventually they had me be the in-house yoga teacher. And then I was like teaching to 50 people at once. And it was like such a huge expansion for me at that age. And I was so nervous every single time I would be sitting in my meditation practice being like, what am I going to teach? How am I going to do it? I was freaking out. Am I going to mess up? And I was so scared. And then it like really put me in this leadership role of teaching. And then eventually they asked me to be the first female teacher for meditation in these retreats. And I started to teach and facilitate these courses, just short sessions here and there. And it was like, but it was still guiding meditation to 50 people at a young age. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, who is this young girl? But little did they know I had been sitting 10 days every month, 10 days every month, 10 days every month.
Every month, 10 days. For how long?
For a year and a half. And in between then, as we said at the beginning of this call, I had a very expansive like the way that I connect to the material realm is expansive. And then also the way that I connect to the spiritual realm is expansive. So in between my 10-day meditation retreats where I would be in silence, then I'd go out and then afterwards I would party and I would play and I would be wild and I would be crazy. And then I was like, you know, also like modeling too, and like using the little, you know, I would get paid here and there for these modeling jobs and I would use it just to like live the very bare minimum because I couldn't get like a regular job because I was constantly in a 10-day meditation retreat. And then I would literally have the most expansive material journey of traveling and modeling and whatever, and boys and silliness and medicines. And then I would go back into 10-day silent meditation retreat and be like, okay, time to do my spiritual practice.
That's really amazing. So that you didn't at some point just, you know, get lost in this partying and so, but always came back to this practice, that it was like really rooted in the practice. And from there, you went out, if I understand it right, and came back and went out and came back.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's like 10 days of the month, I was a nun. I was meditating. And the 20 days of the month, I was being crazy and traveling and trying to make money in any way that I could. And I lived in Hawaii. I was living in Hawaii where the whales were coming. So I was like going out and swimming with the whales and just having the most magical journeys. And then, you know, a year and a half passed by of this and of this really intense pendulum swing of going into the depths of spiritual practice and then into the depths of the material world. And then I was like, okay, how do I find balance here? And I was like, I'm really ready to have money. It decided. I was like, I'm tired of living off of food stamps and money for my modeling gigs. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm ready to have my own money. So I remember sitting in a meditation retreat and saying, okay, like, God, like, I just would please, like, I want money so I can like pay rent for myself and have my own home and eat really good food and be able to buy myself the clothes that I want and travel and not feel like I'm just broke all the time. And then shortly after that, I was like at a dinner party and there was like all these wealthy people and my friend he was always fascinated by me going in and out of these meditation retreats and then coming back out. And he was like, I can see that these meditation retreats are working. Like you are tapped in. He was like, but it's time for you to do something with this. And he was like, I'm going to gift you this coaching program and you have to go to San Francisco and you have to complete the program. It's like about a 6-month program. The program was called Atlas and it's similar to MITT and these certain technologies that are meant to break down your ego and then have you be rebuilt into somebody who can take their visions and bring it into reality. So I was like, okay, sure. I had no idea what I was getting myself into. And I showed up and you had to like dress up in these suits and like be all coachy. And then they just threw you into these really intensive exercises that made you get really clear on what you wanted and also how to make your what you wanted into a reality. And the exercises that they put us through, I have to say, were intense. Mm-hmm. You had a very short amount of time with a really big vision. And like, it's like if you had to get it done, otherwise you would get like coached in front of hundreds of people. And it was super intense. And like people were constantly crying and people were constantly just like, it was this whole spiritual journey, but it was all the while everybody was in their like little coaching suits. And that program was the catapult into me saying, okay, I can have my own meditation business. I can run meditation retreats. And I wanted to do custom meditation retreats. And it was in this program one day where we had this paperclip. Have you heard of this paperclip story where you have to take paperclips and then trade it up to see how far you can go? So anyways, they gave us all paper clips and they said, go out onto the streets of San Francisco and trade up to see what you can get. And then whoever has the highest value thing will win. And I went out onto the streets of San Francisco in my suit and I was traded somebody. I was like, hey, can I trade this paperclip for something? And they gave me a sunscreen bottle. I was like, okay, this is random. And then somebody else traded me the sunscreen bottle for this right glove. And then I had this right-handed glove and I was like, okay, I'm going to go to the construction site and I am going to just see if I can get a drill or whatever. And I was super focused on my plan. And out of nowhere, as I was walking, I physically run into this guy. And this guy was holding his coffee and he like spills it everywhere. And he looks at me. I'm like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And he starts laughing. He's like, what are you doing? I was like, because I like had like a coffee myself and my glove and I'm like wearing this suit. And he was like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm in this coaching program. I'm trying to trade this glove up for something else. And he was like, well, literally, he's like, I know this sounds weird. My apartment is right here. Let me trade you a glove or something. And me being naive and young, I was like, okay, sure. Like, let's see. Going to this guy's apartment. Hopefully my mom's not listening to this story. And I go into this apartment and I'm like, Chad, he's like, do you want this book? Do you want this seashell? Do you want this tambourine? And I take the tambourine and I start dancing with it. And then he was like, tell me about yourself. And I told him the program that I was a part of and why I was doing it and how badly I wanted to run personalized meditation retreats in Hawaii. And as I was saying this, he was like, are you freaking serious? I have been searching online, trying to find personalized meditation retreats in Hawaii. And I was like, oh, yeah, I was like, yes, totally. Well, okay, like, let's book it in. And no joke, this guy became my first client. He paid me $4,000. I went from being a broke hippie girl to suddenly, I was like, yes, my private meditation retreat is $4,000. And he was like, great, cool. He didn't even think about it. He was like, no problem. Sent over the money. I freaked out. I was like, what? And I like, he didn't send it right there. And then like we had a consultation like a week later or something. And it was just like, it was literally like the paperclip just transformed me into finding my first client and gave me the belief that I needed to say like, I can start my own meditation retreats and God has my back.
That's really amazing. What a story. Did you then also start your online business as a life coach? Because I mean, it's super young still.
I was super young. So I started to run my own meditation retreats where it was like in person. And that was my whole vision. I was trying to figure out where I should do it. I was like, do I do it in Bali? Do I do it in Hawaii? And then I went back to work as a coach for this program. So I was like, I really want more experience coaching people. I loved the vibe of it. And then my retreat business was like building up. It was doing pretty good. And then COVID hit. So it was 2020 and no one was going to meet in person. Nobody. Yeah. It was like COVID hit. And I literally went, okay, time for me to learn how to coach people online. So thank goodness I had hired a business coach. And I was actually thinking about this today and how when I hired my business coach, I was paying her like $1,200 or $1,300 a month. And it was the most money I had ever paid for anything. The most rent I had ever paid in my life was $800 US. So suddenly I was paying this coach $1,300 a month. And I was like, oh my God, but thank goodness I hired her. She helped me build out what was called a summit, where I created this 20-person interview series of people from around the world asking them what abundance truly was for them and how they could create it for themselves. Mm-hmm. So I made this whole series and my business coach was guiding me through it. And then I released it. I was working on it like while COVID was happening. And then I released it to the world. And shortly thereafterwards, my online business just blew up in the best way.
But how did you get to this decision? Because it seems like such a big stretch.
Yeah, it was literally like, it was crazy. It was this one intuitive thing where I had gone through the coaching program and I was talking to one of my girlfriends who was older than me. And I was like, this guy said that he's going to just build my business for me. He's going to do all of the marketing and then it's going to be great. And she looked me dead in the eyes and she said, Tara, no one's going to just build a business for you. Like you have to put in all of the work to make this happen for yourself. And she was like, you should probably hire a business coach. And I was like, oh, okay. And it really hit me. And my intuition was like, you have this family friend. I've seen her do all of this stuff online. I had no idea about the coaching world at all. I didn't really know what it was. And I called her up. I was like, hey, you do this coaching thing. Like, I don't even know what it is. I was like, can you help me? And she talked to me for a while and she was like, yep, I can absolutely get to you to where you want to go. And then she was like, this is how much it is. And I was like, are you serious? Like, you want me to pay you $1,300 a month for 6 months minimum? I was like, are you freaking kidding me? I was like, I think I had like $5,000 in my bank account or something. So I was like, I was like, well, if I'm going to do it, I have to fucking figure this out quick and give myself no back door. And it was the scariest moment of my life, just like reading over the contract with her and just being like, this is what I'm committing to. And I was like reading the fine print being like, could I get out of this if I needed to? And like, and it was so funny. And I just knew I had to build my business and I knew that I didn't know how. And I knew that she would help me. I decided to fully trust her. And I leapt right in and I like was doing some calls with her and doing some group calls and really didn't understand how it worked. I was kind of confused. And then I was like, okay, listen, like I need help finding clients. She was like, okay, well, let's build you a summit. She was like, you need to build your email list. I was like, I have no idea what that is, but tell me how to do it. And then that's when I began my 3 month journey of like reaching out to these high profile people and people that I looked up to and being like, hey, can I interview you? And just, you know, of course getting a lot of no's, but then also getting a lot of yeses and getting to talk to these people in like a podcast form and asking them these questions. And then I like, you know, created this whole series and all of these people had been on these like, you know, yoga journal and ABC and whatever. And I created this website where I was like, listen, I made this series. It's totally for free. And all of these experts have been on these crazy things. And it helped position me in this way where people were like, who's this chick? You know, this like young 27, 28 year old girl, like talking to all these people. And after launching that, I had like an influx of people who were really curious about me, really curious about my work. I had told a little bit of my story of my background in meditation. And then that's when I decided to launch my 6 month program. And it was like a big 6 month program and where I was teaching people how to connect to God and spirit and get really clear on their visions and then use the tools from coaching into how to make it into reality. So background in meditation and visioning and then background in coaching and Atlas made me make this whole online thing in my own version, my own way. And then that's when I like just started coaching, like coaching tons of people. A ton of people joined into my program. And then I kind of just like went full for it for I think like 2 years, 3 years in online coaching. And then that's when the call got deeper for me to study astrology deeper and study human design deeper and study systems that could really deeply help me, because I had a general template on how to help people. And I was working very intuitively with my meditation practice, with my skills from Atlas. But then I really realized how unique and different every single person was. And I had always had a mentor to study with, but then I had this experience at the peak of my Saturn return, which made me work with this mentor who used astrology and human design very deeply. And it was the most seen and held I had ever felt. And I simply asked him, I was like, you got to teach me all of these things. Like, I want to learn the ways that you're helping me. And then that began my journey of astrology and human design. And that was actually 2 years ago. So, which is crazy to me. How did that time just fly by. But yeah, that was 2 years ago.
But this moment, I don't know if you want to share about it. You shared online a bit about it. The moment, the peak of your Saturn return, was it the moment when you were taking vitamin C powder, supposedly? Was it that one?
Yeah, that was the story. So one morning had been taking my morning supplements. I had just come back from a festival in California. I was back home in Hawaii. And it was a Thursday morning, and I was like, okay, I'm going to be on my health and wellness game. I'm going to take my chaga and my reishi and my vitamin C. And then I went to the coffee shop with my boyfriend a couple minutes away from my house. And I was like, I'm going to get back on my coaching grind, get really clear on what my vision is. And then, start working again deeply. And then as I was sitting there, out of nowhere, I just start seeing colors and everything starts moving. And I'm like, whoa, my vitamins are hitting so hard right now. What is happening? And then I started to see all of these colors and everything swirling. And then I was like, oh my God, I think the vitamin C was MDMA.
So it was really like a huge amount of MDMA in that case?
It was a huge amount of MDMA. Jesus. It was a half gram of MDMA. And if you're trying to take a normal dose of MDMA, you take 0.1. Mm-hmm. And that's like a big dose. That's like, you're going to be gone for the night. So I took 0.5.
Oh my God. And it was just like randomly. So you didn't know and it just happened to you?
I had no idea. I wasn't trying to get high on a Thursday. I wasn't trying to get high. I was just trying to take my vitamins and go to the coffee shop. And that moment was just so humbling because I'm just tripping balls. And of course I'm scared, but I'm not scared because it's MDMA. It's the super loving drug. And my boyfriend takes me back to the house. And then MDMA is not psychedelic, but everything is moving and colorful and swirly as if it was LSD or mm-hmm. a plant medicine or mushrooms. And then I had this whole experience of this like portal opening and all of my guides coming in and seeing beyond. And they were like, it's going to be okay. And I was like, what do you mean it's going to be okay? Like, they're like, no matter what happens, I was like, I'm not trying to die right now. Like, I'm trying to be here. Because they were saying, like, it doesn't matter. Like, in, you know, this reality, whatever reality, like, it's going to be fine. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's not what I want to hear. And my boyfriend was like, you need to go to the hospital. I was like, yeah, I need to go to the hospital. So I went to the hospital. They did what they could. They had no idea what they were doing. And I asked them to leave. So I left and started my own personal healing journey of healing my body, healing my psyche. Mm-hmm. And then...
Because it was like such a profound experience that took time to heal from it and to come back from it.
100%. Mm-hmm. I was high for about like 2 days, maybe three. Mm-hmm. And then it was about a full month of maybe 2 months of me not being okay. Like just straight up, I wasn't even on this planet. And then I was completely sober for a year, like didn't touch anything, obviously. And then I think shortly after that, I just like opened up a little bit and started like smoking weed again and just maybe some alcohol here and there. But I was like stone cold sober for a year. And that experience was so big. And I was already so tapped into God and spirit because of my background that it just opened it up on a level that I would just be sitting and having a normal day. And then suddenly I would just start tripping and seeing things and hearing things. And it was like, okay, my psychic channel is really, really open. And I had already began my work learning the Akashic Records, mm-hmm. which is this deeply occult practice of tapping into a dimension in which all information exists, and you're able to see people's past lives and future timelines and do deep soul work with people. And I had already been working in those realms, and it was like already such this huge initiation, because when I was sober and going into these realms of the Akashic Records and feeling like I was tripping, and then suddenly, so it was like I was opening my psychic channels a lot during that time before the overdose. And then after the overdose happened, my channel was just blasted open, and I felt like I couldn't control when I was going in and out of the records, and it was hard for me to grasp reality. So I had to like pause my work with the records a little bit. And then it was like after the overdose, I think 6 months later or so, that I finally started to work with the Akashic Records again. And that whole experience happened about like 2.5 years ago or something that, but it was shortly after that I found my mentor, and my mentor was all around nervous system healing and using the planets and your human design to get you into right relationship. And I was so blown away by his work that it brought me so deeply back into my spiritual practices in a way that was really needed at that time.
Why the stars? I mean, I know so many people who are like, what on earth would the stars have to do with anything? And so why was it that the stars were speaking to you, and that you came from the Akashic Records into human design and astrology and went down that path?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. So when my mentor at the time opened up my birth chart, I had never really gotten a birth chart reading before. And I had always dabbled in astrology, was always reading it, reading other people's things, horoscopes and such. And then when he pulled up my natal Western birth chart and read it to me, my jaw was dropped. It was hands down the most seen that I had ever felt in my life. I was like, this human right here is able to see things that other people who are close to me who can't see that. And he was able to describe me in all of these ways. And it gave me this permission slip to be who I truly was. And just it dropped me so much deeper into spirit through being seen in this way. And when he read that chart, all I could think was like, I've been looking for a deeper way to work with the people in my world. I want to work with my clients more deeply. And I immediately knew I need to learn how to do this so I can read for other people. I want to be able to really see people and give them the permission slip needed for them to be who they are on a soul level. So I was like, please teach this to me. Please teach this to me. And he started to show me some things. And then eventually, it's very interesting. His work all ties deeply to the spine and the way that the planets relate to the spine. And the spine, interestingly enough, connects very deeply to the Akashic Records. And when we were doing the subtle body healing, when I was working with him, and still do work with him, but when he would guide me through these processes with my spine, I would enter into states exactly the same as the Akashic Records. So I was like, okay, there's these weird, strange parallels here between astrology, how it relates to somebody's spine and how they manifest into this material world, and then how that relates to their soul over many timelines. And it's like the map has shown me to be this blueprint of somebody. So before I even open somebody's Akashic Records, I'm able to see this blueprint of them. And then the piece around human design is like, cool, we see the blueprint. I can see the past lives and such. But then how do they move through time and space? Mm-hmm. And that is where human design comes in, because every single person relates to time and space differently. A manifestor versus a generator versus a projector, when life gives them lemons, what they do with it is different based on their design type. So human design has been this added layer of like teaching, like being able to coach people in a way that is very specific to them.
That feels like so helpful for the work as a coach, because you have this blueprint, as you say, so you see who they are and what their issues might be already like on this blueprint on paper, and then from there on start the coaching process with them.
Yeah, it's so helpful, because like I can like be looking at somebody's chart, and like if I were to just have a normal coaching conversation with somebody before my astrology background, we would find the pockets that were deep, but honestly I feel like it was a little bit contrived. Versus when I'm with somebody's chart, I'll be looking at it for a while and then I'll like read it. And then eventually we'll circle around into this point where I'm like, oh, this is what really needs to be worked on. And it's almost like this thread that you're able to pull out, and they're like, oh, okay. And then you can and work with these really deep pieces with somebody. And it's something that they would have like not revealed to you if you were just having a conversation. So it's like I'm able to see the behind the scenes, and then also looking at transits, which is like where planets are at in the sky right now and how they're interacting with somebody. So like somebody can come to me and I'm like, okay, you think you're depressed, but this is actually just Saturn and Pluto doing weird things to your moon. Okay, and this is how you can work with it, and like making people not feel wrong or like needing to change their emotions, but like really teaching people to accept the way that life is moving through them and around them.
And how has it changed for yourself, like working with the stars, like really on a daily basis in this human experience? What did it shift for you?
It is so cool. It is so cool. So like there's this level of myth and mysticism that is alive in my daily life at every single moment, where I'm able to track omens based on where the moon is at or where Saturn is at. And like when I can see things and feel things coming to fruition where I'm like, oh, that was a message from Saturn and I need to be more aware in these areas of my life. Or like, okay, I can look at people's charts and knowing people's charts. And when they come to me, I'm like, oh, Venus is coming to me right now with a gift. Oh, okay. This is glitching in my life. Like Mercury wants me to pay attention to this. So it's like this, it's this language and this lens that I'm able to see this world, that it blends the spiritual and the material in this very beautiful bridge, instead of having them be separate, where before when I was younger and I was listening to just energy, it's like I didn't have the language for it. It was just this vast, mysterious like feeling, and then the material being like seemingly separate, but not. And then now astrology acts as this bridge where I'm able to work with omens, and like I can track on my chart and see like what I'm supposed to focus on in my life. And like it's also given me a lot of grace for understanding bigger transits and chapters of what I'm supposed to be focusing on in my life. Like right now, like I'm single, and I actually know by my charts, like this is not a good time for me to be in a relationship. It's not a good time for me to date. This is a great time for me to be selfish and just do my thing and work on my career. But based on my charts, I also know that like I'm going to have the most amazing partner when the time is right. And I'm not pressuring it. I'm not like thinking like, oh, what's wrong with me? I'm 31 and I'm single. I'm like, nope, not my chapter for fully, you know, being in a relationship with others. So it's like given me this permission slip to be who I am, and given me this mysticism, and then also this grace around it all.
So this is, to recap the parts that you're working with now, it's a lot of meditation practice, right? And then you're working with astrology, with human design, with the Akashic records, and bringing all this together also with your coaching experience to guide people on a one-on-one basis and also in retreats?
Yeah, pretty much that. So I have my one-on-one clients, and I'm just, ever since I've gotten, like, as there's been a deeper bridge and integration between the spiritual and material for me, I feel like before there was kind of this push in my coaching business where I was like, sign up, work with me, da da da. And that was healthy, it was cool, it was good. But now it's like I just lean back and the most amazing souls come to me. Mm-hmm. And like, and I am honored because from a very human perspective, I'm a 31-year-old girl. Like, I'm a girl woman, and I'm like, there's still initiations that I have yet to have, but there are these powerful people who come to me to be held. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, thank you, God, for allowing me this opportunity to serve people in the skills that I have and the way that I know best, and like holding people through very deep spiritual processes. And I'm just so honored to do that. And that's my one-on-one work. And then like, it's cool. I also get like a lot of readings and people come in for business coaching, and I'm using the human design maps and the astrology maps for that. And then I get these really like quantum people who come in, and I'm able to use the Akashic records, and we're going in and doing this very cool mystical work of like rewriting timelines and seeing like what contracts they've been through in their past lives and helping them step into new iterations in this life. And then, so that's all my one-on-one work. And then I have my retreats, Still Life is what I call it. And that's like a retreat brand that I'm building. And it's so fully my life's work to give people the space to be in silent meditation and be creatively expressed. And then I'm like, I have a million group programs that I want to run and have run. And currently I'm only running a writing group. And then I'll probably run my business coaching program again here shortly. And yeah, it's a full fun plate. Like, it's a lot of stuff, but it's all so amazing.
Yeah. And at the same time, you're traveling a lot and really enjoying life and doing all of that. And it seems so effortless. I don't know if it's that like that all the time, but from the outside, it feels really effortless in a way. Is it like that?
You know, in some ways, absolutely. And in some ways, there's tons of hard moments where I'm like, and I also think that, you know, Instagram gets the highlight reels for sure. And there's moments where it doesn't feel graceful. Like today, I wanted to just like be in nature all day. And then I was like, messed up the time for something, and I slept in because I drank a little last night, and then I was like, well, there goes my river day. And then there's also times where it's like, it's just, there can be like a lot on my plate and I'm not able to get it all done. Of course, like when my hunger for life is so big, it's like, okay, it's really just like needing to do things like one step at a time and chew just one bite at a time. But I have like a pretty big plate of things that I desire to do in this life.
And you also, we didn't yet talk about that because you just mentioned the aspect of creativity that is connected to your Still Life retreat. You also are writing poems, quite amazing poems, I must say. I really love your writing.
That means so much coming from a fellow writer. Thank you. Yeah, it was, I signed a book publishing contract this year.
Oh, did this come to you, the book signing deal?
By the grace of God. I'm just so grateful. Everything comes by the grace of God. I had somebody message me online who wanted to join my online meditation group. And he had sent me messages from 3 years ago saying, hey, I see that you write. If you ever want to talk about publishing a book, I have a publishing house and we should talk about it. And he sent those messages like 3 years ago. And I was like, oh, cool. Never really thought, didn't think too much of it. And then when I was writing with him about the meditation group, I was like, hey, do you still have your publishing house? Like, and he was like, yeah. I was like, I am literally in this moment working on my book. And I was like at my laptop, like finishing up some things. I was about to self-publish it on Amazon. And he was like, well, send me some stuff. So I sent him some stuff, and then I didn't think much of it. And then he joined my meditation group, which was really cool. And then he was like, yeah, so we really like your poetry and I see your background in meditation and I just like see who you are and like, I'm just like, love your story and really believe in you. And we'd like to sign you on for minimum of 2 books. This one that you're about to publish, we want to publish it. And then the next one, we want you to write a book specifically about meditation in your own way, in your own unique way. And we would love to like help popularize meditation in this very like through the way that you describe it, instead of being like this, like, oh, you need to be a monk and, you know, do practices in this way. And they gave me a really amazing deal and contract. And
that's so beautiful.
Yeah,
that's great. And when is it coming out, your poetry book?
Yeah, so I'm waiting on a couple little things and we're finishing up the cover design. We're like working on that. And there's some other things too, where it's like, I have these images in there that are so beautiful, but they're a little risque and trying to figure out which ones can go in there without Amazon pulling it. And just, you know, there's some things that get to be done, but it'll be out. I'll just say, let's just give it a loose timeline of within a year, but hopefully sooner than later. And then the next one, who knows?
So if there would be one or two things that if people are in a rough place and feel they want to go journeying to get better, to get well, what would be like the first two things that come to your mind that you would give them?
I would say go to a Vipassana retreat, a 10-day sit. Mm-hmm. They're free. They're all over the world. Go sit for 10 days and really learn how to be with yourself. That's like the first thing that comes to mind. And then the second is pray. Learn how to pray. So meditation is listening to God and praying is speaking to God and really taking some time to voice your desires and what you need and support, and asking for support from God. Yeah, that's what I would say. Mm-hmm. If you're in a hard spot.
Mm-hmm. And the last question I always ask is, if there was the grand book of stories, like a book, and you could contribute a story, a poem, a song, whatever, also for the future generations to come, is there anything that comes to your mind that you would say, I would enter this one?
Yes, 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 yes. Okay. I want to enter a poem. That's in my poetry book. And it's actually what inspired my poetry book. So I'm going to read that. This poem is called Duality. I choose both. Jungle queen and city scenes. Dirty feet and clean sheets. Overalls and sexy chic. Life's too short to be one thing. So I'm a chameleon that stands out. I'm a nobody with high clout. I can be in silence and I can shout. I live the question without a doubt. Duality is the game. So I'll play it wild and I'll play it tame. Always changing, but really the same. I'm wandering down a single lane with the sunshine in the rain. I'm crying with the cosmic joke. I'm taking a nap and I'm super woke. Always sober, I'll take a toke and forget all these words I ever wrote.
That was Tara Moralida on Collecting Sparks. Thanks for listening. I love how Tara takes life as a huge playground with childlike awe. Most of us tend to get a bit too serious and worrisome along the way. This conversation is a great reminder to let loose from time to time and observe the magic unfolding. If you want to work with Tara, check out the show notes with links to her worldwide meditation retreats and one-on-one coaching options. I had my chart read by her and the insight I received blew my mind.
If you liked this episode, please recommend, share and comment. It means the world. Until the next time with Collecting Sparks, much love, Sarah.